This episode of GameScoop is sponsored by Squarespace. If you're looking for a way to make your business stand out and succeed online, Squarespace is the all-in-one website platform for you. They take the stress out of creating an awesome website, engaging with your audience, and selling anything from products to content to time, so you're able to focus on, you know, everything else. In other words, you'll have more time for gaming. With the new guided design system, you can choose from curated layouts and styling options to build a unique online presence from the ground up, optimized for every device. And with Squarespace's integrated, optimized SEO tools, you'll show up more often to more people. Squarespace doesn't just make things easier for you. Checkout for your customers is made seamless with simple but powerful payment tools that allow you to accept credit cards, PayPal, and Apple Pay, and in eligible countries, offer the option to buy now and pay later with Afterpay and Clearpay. So whether you're just starting out or looking to expand your existing brand, be sure to visit squarespace.com for a free trial, and when you're ready to launch, go to squarespace.com/gamescoop to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. That's squarespace.com/gamescoop for 10% off. You know, when it comes to wireless carriers, sometimes what you see isn't always what you get. Except with Visible. With Visible, what you see is exactly what you get. If you haven't heard of Visible, well, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. With Visible, there are no hidden fees, no fine print, no hassle, nothing to hide. It's just $25 a month, all taxes and fees included. And you don't need more than one line of wireless to save. You can save on a line all to yourself with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. And again, just $25 a month. The future of wireless is here, and it is transparent. If you want more transparency in your wireless plan, you want to be on the Visible plan. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. That's Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com. What's up, everybody? Welcome to IGN GameScoop. I'm your host, Damon Hatfield. Joining me this week is Tina Amini.
What's up?
Sam Claiborne.
Hey, everybody.
And Mark Medina.
I'm back. Hi.
We have, yeah.
Wait, you're back.
We're back.
Don't steal Sam's thunder.
Yeah.
Hold on. How long have you been gone?
Oh, God.
Which of you went to a more exotic place?
How long have you been gone?
Okay. Since before E3.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well. Feels like Sam's been gone for a month.
He had a
day before you left, I left. So it's the whole time you've been gone, I've been gone.
Oh, okay.
Plus one day, so I win.
Is a competition.
I've only been gone for one
day. We made it one.
But I missed one GameScoop in this studio, and I've never been in here.
I was in here not 3 hours ago for Unlocked, for my first time.
If you're listening to the audio, you should go check out what our new studio looks like, because I can't believe how good it looks.
Looks really nice. We're happy with it. I think it's sounding better this week, too, hopefully. There's a little bit of an echo last week. I think CJ Gibson sorted that out. And if he didn't, it's at Gibson Films on Twitter. We have a great show for this week. Even though it's a pretty slow news week, it's Comic-Con Eve. I'm heading down to Comic-Con tomorrow. Tina is as well. Mark, are you going?
No.
No, Mark's not going.
I'm here.
The two of us will be going down there.
We're going to be the only people in the office.
Yeah, it's just me and Sam.
Leave us with stuff to do, because otherwise it's Mario 64.
We're just going to play Mario.
That's not a bad idea.
But of course, even when it's a slow news week, we always have our great emails from our listeners and viewers that we can answer. We'll get to those in just a second. But first, Sam has prepared a full report on what he did during his summer vacation in Japan.
Mm-hmm. Do you want it in order of what animals I saw?
Yes.
Okay. Well, alphabetically, I saw deer and then monkeys.
Cool. But you also
saw cats. That's
did you see deer
it?
And Nara?
Yeah.
Did you feed them?
Listen.
Hold on.
You don't feed the deer.
Yeah.
The deer just run up and eat whatever you have.
I know.
Like, I had like a bag of sandwiches, and the deer was just like in there.
Well, why'd you do that?
And then I had like, a jacket, and the deer like made, like, I had to get patches on it afterwards.
Okay.
Wow. Putting your sandwiches in a bag is very Canadian of you.
They put everything in bags.
That's milk
in bags. I didn't see any liquid in bags in Canada. But yeah, there's deer that are tame in a park, and like so many of them, it's like more deer than pigeons. It's really, really crazy. Yeah. And then in a monkey park,
they bow at you so that you will feed them. But
yeah. Do they actually do that? Yeah. Do they actually do that?
No, they do like a stabbing motion with their antlers.
No.
They come up to you and they go, stab you.
They didn't ask. They took.
Hand over the bag.
That's what the bow is there, right?
The bow is a request for food, yeah.
But it's not, they don't get down on their knees. They just bow their horns at you.
Yeah, they bow their horns at you.
They try to stab you. But they've ground down their horns to little nubs so they can't actually stab you.
Be difficult.
You and can't by even day, tell I mean, there must be some sort of park or not anymore.
Everything I'm saying is true.
Uh-huh.
So you've been there, right?
I know, but they didn't stab me with their antlers.
Oh, no, I'm just saying they're threatening to.
Well, yes. They do bite at you, though.
Yeah, yeah, they'll get in your bag.
Your bag of sandwiches. I've been to a monkey park in Kyoto. Is that the one you went to?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I think
where you walk way, it's a long hike up the mountain.
Yeah, and it's steep and it was really hot in the summer. But and the whole way, there's signs about the monkeys, right? Yeah. They're like, you know, don't do this. Well, in other parks, you go there and they're like, don't feed the monkeys, period. But this park, they're like, you're going to feed the monkeys, but you can't feed them anything else. And they give you peanuts or something to feed them.
Also, normally the animals will be the ones in cages, but in this situation, you're in the cage.
Yeah, they put you in cages. Yes. The monkeys.
You can only feed them when you're in the human cage.
Yeah. And they'll stick their grubby little hands inside, and you can hold out your hand with peanuts and they'll grab it. And I just remember the way their leathery little fingers filled felt.
They also go like this if they want the food.
Yeah.
They make a little grabbing motion.
You'll give them a peanut. And they just shove it in their cheeks and ask for another one right away.
Yeah.
And they'll just keep shoving it in their cheeks.
Like chipmunks. Yeah.
Dude, same.
They're smart.
They don't bow at all.
No, they're not bowing.
No bowing. Yeah. They play like humans. And like I saw like them running around and there's a little pond there. And these two like adolescent males were, and you can tell they're males because they have big terrifying fangs. Mm-hmm. They're like hitting each other and jumping in the pond and stuff like that. And then, one of them was like chasing the other one around, and the other one like turns around and just does a full cannonball and splashes everybody.
It's pretty good.
They're pretty tricky too. They'll use some monkeys as distractions to steal your food. Otherwise, they're pretty sneaky.
They're cunning.
Everybody wants your food. Mm-hmm. Every animal wants your food in Japan.
Mm-hmm. And you went to a Super Potato.
I did.
You probably went to the better one, actually.
Yeah, I went to the one in Nagoya, and it's like, you know, Nagoya is not a real tourist destination. Mm. It's a big city, and it has a lot of retro games, which made Super Potato there really cool. I have a whole rant about this.
Okay.
There's this problem right now where otaku have to ruin everything. One of the things they ruin is if you go to Japan, say you went to Super Potato, a bunch of people attack you online. And they're like, why don't you go to a real video game store? That's a real thing that's happening.
Can I get like 10 seconds of context on what a Super Potato is?
So Super Potato is just a video. It's a comprehensive collector-based video game store. So you go there and they have every game with very small holes in collections and like different levels of condition, and you can see them all and you can just buy them if you want them, right? But a lot of them are really expensive. So it's not a place you go to dig. It's a place to see like a comprehensive, amazingly curated collection of games that are priced accordingly because they want to keep that collection, you know, relatively intact. So the point of Super Potato is not the same as a flea market or a used bookstore. And I'm so, so annoyed by this concept. Like I collect things so obsessively. I know what the hell I'm doing, and I do not need some little dorks to tell me not to go to Super Potato.
Can
you imagine if there was a store that had every single Star Wars toy that ever existed, and every box, mint condition, they had the pulled ones too, and you could just go there? Wouldn't you just go there just to see what that looked like?
Yes.
So it would look amazing. That's what Super Potato is. I don't care if how much you guys go dig at flea markets.
I was going to say, is the idea that it's like, oh, you're not being like a purist collector. We go to flea markets every Saturday morning.
I've been doing this with records my entire life and video games for decades. I've pulled Atari Video Music at a flea market I won't even tell you about in San Francisco because I don't want you to freaking go there because I'm competitive about it. I cannot believe how stupid this reaction is. Anyway, Super Potato is amazing. I took some pictures of it and I tweeted them out and got attacked. But check it out when you go to Tokyo too, because again, like you get to see every Famicom game. They just have them all.
Mm-hmm. That's so cool.
And I bought some games for Jared. And I saw some cool stuff there. And I bought two very special things. I bought like a really, really nice condition Doki Doki Panic, which is the game that, you know, became Mario 2 here. Shigeru Miyamoto designed a disk system game. I can't wait to show you guys. There's all these little booklets and stuff with drawings in it. It's really, really cute. And then I also got a thing called the Hudson Shooter Watch. And that is, it's from the era of Game & Watch. It's all it is a device that counts how many times you can hit the A button quickly.
Yeah.
That's cool.
So it's like, yeah.
It's related to a TV show.
It's like in a minute or something?
It's really, really competitive. And so I'll bring it
like
to the office.
Just QTE the game, essentially.
Yes, exactly.
Wait, but you're pressing different buttons?
No, it's just the A button.
And it's a minute?
It's a Nintendo, yeah. tiny
it's
yellow
the one
Nintendo
where you've
controller.
Already grabbed someone and you just need to kill them now.
Yeah, exactly. And then if you screw up, you got to start the whole the fight
the
over
whole
again.
Cycle
that
over.
Sounds easy until you're doing it this for a
well,
minute.
Well, we'll see.
What people used to
we're gonna bring on the show. Bring on the show.
Oh, that'd be great.
What people used to relate it to was in Mario Party. There was always button mashing games. Did you ever play those? It's just like whoever could button mash the fastest would absolutely win it. But yeah, it's like this. There's this famous guy that popularized it, but it was like really expensive, obviously, because it's Super Potato, and that's what that place is.
Yeah. So I've been to the one in Tokyo, and I just imagine the one you went to is probably less picked over than the one in Tokyo.
Again, it was like comprehensive. Like Jared gave me, I was looking for obscure stuff, but I wasn't going to pay for it. Jared gave me his like obscure stuff list, and like they had every single thing on it. I was like, dude, you got to pick out a couple hundred dollars worth of games here, or else I'll just, I could have spent $3,000 or something on it, like six games.
Wow.
Yeah, it was completely crazy. And so that was really cool. And that was like the most, gamer thing I saw. But I saw a bunch of arcades that were Taito and Sega. And
yeah, they operate their
Konami
own.
Konami has a gym.
Yep.
That's really cool.
That's why
you
they're
just
not
come
making
those logos.
That's why they don't make games anymore. They have that gym to run.
Yeah. And then the very coolest thing, though, I think, was the two Nintendo headquarters that I went to. And I don't know if you guys saw those pictures, but
I saw the older one. Yeah. That
yeah,
was awesome.
And then the new one in Kyoto is like pretty near it, but it's like just like a corporate office park, but it's huge.
Yeah,
people I don't think it comes across when you see this one silver cube with a Nintendo logo on it. There's a whole nother one of those, and they're like 10 stories or something. They're huge, and everything is being developed in those two buildings. And there's a campus with a bunch of other little buildings on it.
And how did you find that building? Did you just like
you can Google both of them? And it used to be really hard because I remember reading an article on how to find the old office, but whatever it is, off factory. But now you can just Google it. And like, you should go to that other one. It's really cool. It's by a craft brewery too called Tokyo Beard Lab, I think, craft or something. Hmm. It's like there's the river in Kyoto on the east side. And then there's like a little canal next to it. It's like the most beautiful walk. It's like all like overgrown and lovely. And there's like all these like little houses. There's no tourists. And then there's the little factory that made Nintendo Hanafuda cards. And they had a little plaque out front and everything. Really, really cool. I went twice.
To Nintendo?
Yeah.
Nice.
I took a bunch of pictures, and then the second time, the bar was nearby. So.
Oh, yeah. Perfect.
Let's go check it out again. It was really silly is that, first of all, there's no graffiti anywhere in Japan, right?
Mm-hmm. Oh,
anywhere.
Cool. Nice.
There's no stickers anywhere. Well, I think graffiti's cool. And like
what? Well, it can be. Graffiti's cool. Tags.
Tags are not.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Yeah, so, but only on that Nintendo building, there's like a sign next to it, like a yield sign, and there's like, people put their stupid retro label stickers on it. 8-bit whatever.
Yeah.
Nice. And then you went to the Ninja Gaiden Castle?
In
Osaka?
I don't know, because I went to like so many castles. They're all the same.
You've seen one castle.
Once you've seen one castle.
But I didn't go to the Osaka castle. I went to the
Like looms over the city.
I know. I spent so much time at the arcades there. It was always like a train going past it and stuff like that. But I went to a really cool one. The Kyoto Castle Tower isn't there anymore. But gosh, which one do we go to the most? I guess Nagoya has like a really big Ninja Gaiden castle. So that's the picture I had.
Yeah.
And that was like, it looks exactly like any video game. It's so fun.
I really want to know your elevator story.
Okay.
He said he has an elevator story.
So I'm the elevator captain now.
Uh-huh.
How's that?
I will show you.
Okay.
But I was in a very dense area of Japan where staying at a hotel, and I had noticed this before, like train stations. If I had like luggage, I'd go in an elevator, but it was never in elevators. But I did take two elevators to get to the hotel. It was like a big sky rise downtown Nagoya. So it was like, elevator then elevator. It was like packed with people every time. And every time I went in there, there'd be a really polite person just operating the elevator. But here's the weird thing. At one point, that person left and somebody just moved right over there and started doing the same thing. And it wasn't like, somebody in a uniform. So I was like, what's going on here? So I go and I look up elevator etiquette in Japan. There's things called elevator captains, and it's amazing. So here's the rules.
That's adorable.
If you get in the elevator and there's nobody in the elevator, you are the captain. All right? And so then you're responsible for the two buttons that are hold the door open and close the door. Mm-hmm. Those buttons that we never even use here.
No. Well, they actually work in Japan.
Yeah, they actually work.
They're always they look.
Yeah, it's hard to tell.
They definitely don't work in the IGN office. Yeah. I see people all the time, and I'm like,
close the
just like when I'm walking
no
up the, to
close
the building,
the door.
Mark's always trying to close the door on me.
Oh yeah.
I always think about like how in the zombie apocalypse or something, you'd just be like, well, goddammit, I wish this button worked.
Yeah.
You just come in and you're done.
So if you're the captain, you have to hold the door open for whoever's going to get on. Everybody loads in. Right. Mm-hmm. And then you close the door and you kind of facilitate the button pressing. Now, if you don't speak Japanese, then you can say, like, which floor are you? Or kind of point. Somebody will kind of hit it. Then at every floor that stops, you open the door as fast as possible. And then as soon as the maximum number of people have gone out and the other people come in, you close it. Like, if you wait another second, you're being real rude. Right?
Oh.
So like that makes you a good captain, right? Mm. So then you have to facilitate the floors again, do that. Now, here's the crazy thing.
Well,
if you are being the captain and it's your floor, you get to hold the door and then you leave. And then the closest person to the panel shifts into the position and becomes the captain.
They're like, look at me. I'm the captain now.
And it happens so smoothly. There was an unwritten rule in that if you're like a doofus from America, they're not going to let you be the captain. They'll just circumvent you.
But you said you
I was. So, but here's what happened. You lose your status. And like, I'll be there and I'll be like holding the door open and like trying to be like, what floor are you going? But then there's that other panel on the other side. And so I'm like, little old lady.
A usurper.
We got this.
She'll have her finger on the close button like before you even get there. Because it's like, you have to switch fast.
Huh. They're like, all right, get to the back. Yeah. Like, we got this.
Yeah. And then there's also a whole like business hierarchy. Like you let your, your boss is never going to be the captain, right? Like if you're in a group of people, the subservient person like slips in first, right? So I was at one point where I was like doing good captain work, like real good. Like nobody had taken, I didn't get usurped at all, you know? And I was like really proud of myself. It was just me and like an older businessman that was left in it. And I was holding the door for him and I was like, please. And he wouldn't leave. So I must have missed some kind of rule or something.
Weird.
And he was like, no, you got to go out.
Sam's checking the handbook.
So I'm like holding the door and I'm like, and I just ran out.
He couldn't leave at the elevator in the
handbook. So here at IGN, you're like, everybody's boss. So you're never the captain
I'm not people's boss in this very room.
That's true. Except for everyone in here. I just painted a really weird picture. You're everyone's boss except for all of ours.
Your captain name should be Captain Commando.
Capcom.
Probably.
I don't think you guys need to follow these rules in America, but if you guys want to start it,
okay.
We can at least give it a shot.
We need to get the elevator door close buttons working in America.
Okay.
Well, we have other unofficial rules that are sort of widely accepted, but never always they're not always followed necessarily. Like if you're going up the escalator, you have to stick to the right.
I'm just
going to
use that as an example.
On the left, yeah. People don't do that.
Cool about that in Japan.
Maybe
here,
in Tokyo,
it's just like the Wild West.
It's in crowded stations that was happening. But here's the thing: I never knew which side to go on. I swear. And like Hiroshima is different than another place.
Oh,
which side do you stand on?
I think it can go back and forth.
Okay.
Based on what region you're in. But yeah, at least everyone's standing on one side.
Yeah, that was freaking me out a little bit.
Yeah.
I have one rule here at IGN.
Okay.
If I am in the first floor and you are not past the guardrail, I'm not holding the door.
Okay.
Sorry, I'm not doing it.
I think that's fair.
It's way too far away.
There's a really long hallway you have to walk up to get to the elevator.
Yeah.
Actually, and if you're still where the guardrail is, because then it becomes this awkward situation. I have to hold the elevator and then the person feels like they have to run. And it's just awkward for everybody.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so you're just kind of like, I'm just going to go. There's two elevators. I'll see you up there.
Yep. That's fine.
Hmm.
Sorry, you're holding 15 pizzas.
So if you guys want to start the elevator captain thing here, though, the most important thing is to make sure everybody else that doesn't know about it, you just think they're rude all the time.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And give them really secretly know that they're rude.
Who do you think at IGN would be the best elevator captain?
Well, Sam just had proper training.
Probably Sam.
Qualified.
Yeah. You know,
Sam has the most experience.
The thing is, you need Twitch reflexes.
Yeah.
So maybe James Duggan.
Bring in the button mashing game.
Yeah, okay.
And then we'll turn into that.
Wait, so you win a chance to be the elevator captain?
Maybe we can.
Yeah, you just live in the elevator.
I'm just going to be like, oh, no, I suck at this game.
Well, remember, anybody can be the captain if you get on first or are nearest to the thing when somebody gets off.
Yeah. Right. Anybody has a chance to be the captain.
Floating role.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, Sam, it sounds like you had a good time on your summer vacation. We should probably talk about video games at some point on this show. Let's talk about GameStop and their latest plan to try and keep their head above water without completely going out of business. As you probably know, GameStop has been playing on hard mode for the past several years. Over the last fiscal year, they reported their the biggest loss in the in their company's entire history, something like $673 million. All last year, they're trying to find someone to buy the company. Nobody wanted to buy the company. Mm-hmm. They gave up the search for that in January 2019. And now they're the fiscal report for their first quarter in 2019 shows that sales are still going down, still trending down. So it's all bad news for GameStop. Their plan was going to turn around is they're going to open new stores dedicated to retro gaming. They're going to do their own super potato.
I'm glad we brought this up because only real gamers will shop at.
Yeah. What are people going to think?
Well, isn't the about selection going to, like, at GameStop?
Yeah, it's terrible. Yeah.
Where are they going to source all their retro stuff? Exactly.
If they really nailed it and like, well, I always heard that like, GameStop does have like central warehousing, but they like stopped selling retro games and then they brought them back for a little bit and like they, you know, all the stuff was happening.
Well, they accept so, trades like, for retro games. So that's like, where anything, they're
getting. Like today, will they take a TurboGrafx-16 game?
Like, yeah, I don't know if it's like that old, but like you can take a batch of Super Nintendo games and take them to GameStop. Or stop and sell them. Why do you think your N64 collection just gets smaller and smaller?
I did sell a copy of like Turok 2, I remember, and it was like when I got the receipt back, it was like I got trade and I remember it being like $1.60.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That was the last time I ever did. I was just like, this, come on, guys.
Yeah. And you can buy retro games on their website right now. I happen to know, just because it's something I'm working on, that an N64 with no games, $80.
Yeah. So that means that they do have central warehousing and documentation of like games. So like if you have that, then you could say, okay, we're going to stock a store really interestingly. And like if Super Potato is their model, like seriously, it's like a walk-in museum that you really try to keep like stock in that looks cool. And then people just go there and then maybe they buy cheaper games.
Isn't it kind of like Blockbuster being like, we're only going to rent old school movies.
Only 80s like, movies.
Yeah, exactly. It does seem like a cool museum kind of quality, but I haven't been to a GameStop in a long time, maybe like a few years ago randomly, but it was a thing that, you know, you grew up with as a kid, but it's irrelevant now with digital sales, especially in Amazon being what it is. But I also recall like their quality and their handling of games and systems wasn't always that great.
So like the rattles. Imagine. You get a game that's rattling.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, or there's just scratches on it. Yeah, exactly, because the game is loose. Or there's just
there's that whole thing where it's like you would buy a new game and they'd go and get the case off the shelf and put the disc in it.
They'd already taken the disc
like,
out.
And they're like, no, it's new. It's never been played, but for display purposes. And you're like, nah.
Yeah.
Why did you crack
if
the
it's
seal?
New, I break the seal. Yeah. There's a website or a YouTube channel, Spawnwave Media, and he devotes a lot of his channel to buying, like, hey, I'm going to buy six or seven different things, a GameCube game, a Super Nintendo game, an actual PlayStation 1 from GameStop, and he gets them all in a box, and then he'll open them and be like, okay, this is okay. This controller feels okay.
Repackaged GameStop stuff.
Yeah, like he'll get it and it'll be like, oh, they're refurbished. And it's like, okay. And then he'll put a PS1 game in the PS1 he ordered. And he'll be like, okay, it works. Or it doesn't work. Or this controller doesn't feel good. And so it's, you know, he just kind of.
And people watch that?
It's pretty entertaining. Yeah, no.
That's actually a good point, though. Like, I mean, just games working, like having somebody test clean and then grade them or test clean and then price them according to their, you know, aesthetic look. That's a big deal. That means somebody actually tested the game. You're not going to big creative games and buying garbage or consoles. Like consoles, like NESs need the 72-pin connector replaced.
Yep.
Like that's kind of cool to have somebody doing that for you. But I can only see them doing this at like Chicago, San Francisco, LA, New York, Atlanta.
It's a lot of cities.
Like, but you know, like the big ones where they can really get a. But GameStop right now is everywhere. I just don't think that you're going to get a retro store maybe in Lawrence, Kansas.
Why not? A bunch of college kids?
Well, that's kind of sad, too, because they'd be competing with GameNut, a great local chain of
retro stores. Well, that's the other thing. Now, if GameStop is going to start directly competing with these mom-and-pop, you know, retro game stores, that's another
thing. Yeah, I live right down the street from a place called Phoenix Games, and they're really, really cool.
They have a big arcade with pinball machines, right?
Yeah. Yeah, and it's like...
You should open
like,
with that when you talk about this place.
It's just like walls of old retro games that seem fairly priced. And then, in the back, there's just pinball machines everywhere. It's really, really cool. But then I live right next door to a GameStop. So
whoa,
yeah, I know.
I go to GameStop to buy games for IGN because sometimes we need extra games or game guides.
Yeah, like on a dime.
You don't do that very often, though, do you?
It's happened a lot recently.
I bought Mario Maker 2 from GameStop. You like and you like a week ago. I went to their 9 o'clock release, and there was like me and five other people there. I was like, all right.
I just bought something there for the office because it was like, you know, we didn't have enough copies of it. What was it? I can't remember what it was, but when I was there, the line was so long and it was like 8:30 in the morning and it was already, you know, people lining up to get a game, but they had plenty of the game. So I was like, oh, this will be fine. And I get in line and every single person talks to the cashier for like so long.
Oh, no.
It's like they're having their own little game scoop, right? And you can tell the cashier doesn't want to talk to it. I feel bad.
Aren't they obligated to like push and pedal some of their programs?
That's what they're doing. They're like, take the strategy guide and you're like, please no. Or like, you know, try
they're
to
like,
upsell
please
you.
Please no, I go to IGN.
Yes.
Yeah. So, I think people are just kind of shooting the shoot, as they say on GameScoop.
Shooting the shoot. Well, we'll see if opening up retro theme stores is the answer to GameStop's woes. There's no way it can be as cool as Super Potato. There's just no way.
Fake gamer.
This episode of Game Scoop is brought to you by NordVPN. As Scoop Nation knows, your Omega Cops have been a little obsessed with a movie called Weekend at Bernie's lately. But as happens too often these days, it is difficult to find it streaming here in the US. That's where NordVPN comes in. With NordVPN, you can switch your virtual location to a more enlightened region where they appreciate the comic delights of Weekend at Bernie's. And it's not just for streaming movies and shows. Switching your virtual location can allow you to save money by purchasing flights, hotels, and subscriptions from other countries at a cheaper price. And you can do all this worry-free as NordVPN threat protection features protect you from viruses, malware, and phishing sites. Best of all, NordVPN costs the price of a cup of coffee a month, and one account can be used on up to 6 devices. To get the best discount on your NordVPN plan, go to nordvpn.com/gamescoop. Our link will also give you 4 extra months on the 2-year plan. There's no risk with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee. That's nordvpn.com/gamescoop. 1 in 5 Americans has learned a new language on their bucket list, or life backlog, if you will. If that's you, make 2024 the year you finally check it off the list with Babbel. Upgrade your personal skill set in 2024 with Babbel, the science-backed language learning app that actually works. Babbel's quick 10-minute lessons are handcrafted by over 200 language experts to help you start speaking a new language in as little as 3 weeks. Its tips and tools are approachable, accessible, rooted in real-life situations, and delivered with conversation-based teaching so you're ready to practice what you've learned in the real world. I have a trip to Mexico coming up, so I've been using Babbel to brush up on my Spanish. The courses are short and sweet, so I can do one whenever I have a few minutes to spare. And the words and phrases it teaches you are designed for practical, real-world use, like ordering at a restaurant or asking for directions. Babbel can even provide you feedback on your pronunciation with its speech recognition tech. And it's not just for Spanish. Babbel includes 14 different language courses, each backed by a 20-day money-back guarantee. Here's a special limited-time deal for Scoop Nation. Right now, get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription, only for our listeners, at babbel.com/gamescoop. Get up to 60% off at babbel.com/gamescoop, spelled BABBEL.com/gamescoop. Rules and restrictions may apply.
You know that one?
No. It went on.
That's Commando.
Oh, wow.
Not the captain, just the Commando. It's before he got his captain. Or his,
before he got promoted.
That gets kind of boring, right?
It's repetitive, yeah. I mean, you walk.
But I just play it over and over again.
You walk north and shoot the same enemies over and over again. Okay. Sometimes they show up in a motorcycle.
All right. You don't have a negative take on this game, it sounds like that.
No, it's a perfect game. You might say it's off the charts.
Yeah.
Let's check in with the listeners.
Hey, listeners.
Listeners, remember you can always reach us at the email address, gamescoop@ign.com, just like David from Chattanooga, Tennessee did.
Cool
David
name.
Says... Mr. from Chattanooga. I'm a relatively new fan of the show, but I can't get enough. The promise of new episodes each week is the reason I wake in the morning, and the thought of Damon's crystal clear enunciation is what helps me sleep soundly at night.
Dude, same.
Dude, it is crystal clear. I can't give this guy enough compliments about his copy reading.
Sometimes I think back to the very first God of War game from 2005, and I recall that my personal reaction to that game was, this is what I want from video games. More specifically, I realized that for me, if a game ran smoothly, was easy on the eyes, and felt responsive, it would be something that I enjoyed. Since then, this realization has helped me make better purchasing decisions and has kept me happily enjoying the medium year after year. I'm curious if you all have also found your it factor in gaming. Are there certain characteristics in a game that immediately elevate it to you, or am I weird for even asking?
Not at all weird.
What do you, what's your like your thing that you're looking for in a video game? Sam and I have talked about, we have a similar thing that we're looking for. We like to explore new worlds. Is that accurate?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, let me process this for a little bit. Okay. Somebody else should answer.
Well,
Mind
you,
Palace.
Have you guys played Outer Wilds yet? I can't stop thinking about it.
I want it to come to the PS4. Hopefully it'll come to the PS4 someday.
No, I just started so last weekend.
Okay.
There are a couple things that I want out of a game. Story is a huge one. You guys know I love a good story, good characters, good character arcs.
Do you like story delivered in a specific way? Like,
no,
it's like it could dialogue
be like a
or
Limbo
like...
style okay. delivery as well. Like a completely muted story. Mm. Just something like, I guess that the way that I would kind of summarize it is something that makes me feel something. So that can be through the story, or it can be like I have really fond memories of my Left 4 Dead days where I constantly felt really like in control and in power and kind of progressing through skill levels. Like I like that as well. Or feeling like it, like The Division 2 is a good game this year for me because I just played it with a lot of friends. So that was a different kind of feeling that evoked it. But Outer Wilds both does this really cool, mysterious storytelling unraveling at the same time of being like a massively exploration focused game. So if you don't know the premise, you wake up and you go through loops and you visit planets within those loops. And after like 20, 30 minutes, whatever, or maybe you die or you run out of oxygen and die or whatever it is, it resets. And the game basically recaps some like screenshots throughout your session. And then you wake up again and go through this loop again. And so you can use a sonar detector to look for audio signals on different planets and be like, I like the sound of this planet. Let me go see what's on there and where the music is specifically coming from. And sometimes it's like an NPC. Sometimes it's a black hole that kills you and puts you into a loop. And I went to one planet. It's an early planet, and I'm still early on, so I'm sure it'll be a no-brainer for anyone who's been playing. But it's this green planet, and you go onto it, and it's literally just water tornadoes, and the entire planet is chaos, and it's sucking you into a main tornado that all the other tornadoes are being sucked into. It's just super cool. I couldn't get over how fascinating that was and how different all the planets were. And then one time I collided into the sun and burned it. Well, actually, I was trying to match my velocity with another planet, and I didn't realize the sun was coming behind me. And all of a sudden, the light started coming into my peripheral vision, and it slammed into me. And I was like, I guess that was the sun, and I died.
Yeah. What happens when you die?
It loops again. You wake up.
You're this alien race, and you wake up on your alien planet, which I think is supposed to be Earth. Actually, I think it's supposed to be some kind of play on Earth.
Scoop.
Well, and there's like a guy sitting by the fire, and he's like, "Hey, you're gonna go? Don't you need the launch codes?" And you're like, "I already have the launch codes."
Yeah.
You have to do everything over again, but you get really good at it because you're like faster.
So you do everything over again, but it doesn't reset the game necessarily. You're still making progress, and it's almost like a platformer in the sense of you figure out, I shouldn't make a left turn here, or like this planet's going to collide into this planet. Like there are asteroids, there are events that are happening too. So there's like an asteroid that might collide into a planet, and you'll remember that, so you won't go to that planet at that time. You'll wait, go to another planet, go there.
Your character remembers stuff. Like what I mean with the launch codes is like at the very beginning of the game, you have to go get launch codes. Your character is like, oh no, I already have the launch codes, and you can go on your ship and it'll tell you.
You don't have to open up your physical notebook and be like, I know this code already.
Codes
are like a series of dots and lines.
It'll tell you like this is what you're working on, and that stays constant.
Okay.
But you do remember different things. I used my autopilot once, and it autopiloted me right into the sun.
Be very careful with the autopilot. It does not detect any collision.
Because the planets spin, and you can't. Sometimes you can't catch up to them because they're orbiting. And so the best way to do it is you have to match its velocity, and then all of a sudden the planet stops moving. It doesn't. You're just matching its velocity, or you can just autopilot. But the autopilot, that'll crash you into stuff.
Yeah, you just have to use it sparingly.
Yeah, you got to use it when it's like, I see the planet, I'm going to...
But there's something different going on all the planets, and there's clearly like an overarching story as well. Not necessarily an end game as far as I understand it, but there is like an overarching story that you start to learn about like a different alien race and, you know, your own people and your involvement with them, etc. But exploration, if you like exploration, that's your thing.
That game sounds really, really cool.
I'm pretty obsessed with it right now. Yeah,
but it's only on PC and Xbox right now,
yes.
I believe.
Yeah.
Yep.
What are your basic?
But it's
tenets?
On Game Pass. If you have, I like. I thought about it, and like, I'm pretty eclectic. I think I don't really look for like this is what I'm looking for in a game. There are certain things where I'm like, okay, so like. I really, really like post-apocalyptic settings. So the more I see on Outer Worlds, the more I'm like, God, this couldn't be more my game. I played a lot of Fallout 76 while I was on break just because I wanted to explore that game. I know, I heard you guys made fun of me. because it's just like, I love post-apocalyptic stuff. And so that'll kind of draw me in. But for the most part, like, you know, right now I'm juggling Just Cause 4. I'll pop into... Assassin's Creed Odyssey. Still trying to get through that. That game is very long. Mm-hmm. But I recently started playing a game called League of Legends Teamfight Tactics because I really, really, really love tower defense games. And this game is weirdly scratching that itch. And so it's...
Is it a tower defense game?
It's an auto chess game.
It's a thorough chess game.
Auto chess is somewhat an evolution of tower defense, if you want to look at it that way. And so I would say, no, there's nothing that I'm like, this is my thing. But I would say, like, seeing something like Spider-Man. Before, I didn't even have to watch a trailer for that game. I'm like, I get to just explore this huge open world as Spider-Man or Assassin's Creed. I get to just run around this huge open world. I pretty much know I'm going to like it.
I guess it has to have a hook. Like every game has its hook. Because I was
gonna
thinking,
have some sort of loop.
Yeah, like if I was thinking, if a game is really stylish, either in its art or its music or its writing, like if it's really stylish, that will keep me playing too. So it just has to have that one hook, no matter what it is. If it's like the exploration is super cool, or the combat is perfect, or just I like the weapons a lot, like whatever it might be, it just has to have that one good hook.
Just also, like music or TV show.
Yeah,
you know, like it works the same way.
I also really, really, really dig short games. Something short like. Games. Something that I honestly can finish in like a setting.
Well, that's
like,
why you're trying to make Mario 64 shorter.
Yeah, exactly.
make it the perfect game.
Something like, there are two games that spring to mind that I started playing and finished without any breaks. What Remains of Edith Finch and Inside. Like those are two games that I just started playing and stopped playing when they were done. And I'm like, they're here because like they are just short enough, but good enough to just consume all at once.
Single playing games is like a really good topic to talk about. It's been a long time since I played a game in a single sitting, but man.
Yeah, that's a good metric.
We were talking about like exploration. Like for me, it's like there's a sense of discovery, and like I really like there to be secrets. And like the way I like to describe this is in the very first review of Super Mario Brothers that was unearthed by, I think, Frank Cifaldi, if not somebody else, adjacent to him. But it was like a school newspaper type thing in the Midwest. Like, first of all, like there weren't game reviews in 1986 like we have them now. There just weren't. And so finding one from 86 or early 87 of Super Mario Brothers is really weird. And the thing that they mentioned that it's not like, oh, the running feels great, or like there's this sense of like jumping and flight, or like there are all these things that people associate with Super Mario Brothers now, right? It was about how there are secrets everywhere. And it was like really cool that like every time you hit a block, maybe an extra life or something could come out of it. Or there's blocks in the middle of the air that you can hit. And like I that's what I loved about Super Mario Brothers when it came out, is that you could take it one step at a time and just kind of like figure it out. Like what's out there? You don't really know. And there's warp zones and stuff like that. Like that's the sense of like wonder and awe I get from exploration games. But like I definitely have another thing now, which I'm really realizing about myself, which is like it has to have a non like realistic earth setting. Like I really don't like, or I ask, it can be in the past or something, but I like don't like Grand Theft Auto very much because it's so mundane for me. Like I live in a big city. I drive a car. I don't like crime. I don't like people shooting each other. Like there's nothing appealing about that game to me, but Red Dead I love. Like I really, really like how it's a, you know, world away. And so when I'm exploring it, it actually feels alien to me. Love futuristic games. Sometimes post-apocalyptic can be a little much because it just gets so drab. Like Rage 2, I was just like, this just feels like a lot of other games and looks like a lot of other games now. But I really like that what you were saying, Tina, about like if there's a hook in graphics, like that's totally true. Like the first time I played Borderlands, like it just didn't matter. A lot of other things in that game didn't matter as much as just how it looked. It was just really
It's just enjoyable.
And Breath of the Wild is that way for me too. Mentioned it once.
The other thing I'll add is that I like games that allow me to approach its problems on my own time and sort of give me however much time I want to sort of analyze the situation. So turn-based games are great at that. So I've been playing Slay the Spire every night for weeks now, because each turn I draw a hand of cards and I have all the time in the world to sort of analyze, you know, is it better to attack this time, or do I need to build up my defense, or like how is this card going to play out? I can just sit there for minutes and minutes and minutes taking my one turn, and that's great. But even something like Metal Gear Solid 5. Like, scouting, I can usually take as much time as I want scouting an outpost, mm-hmm. identifying all the enemies, planning the route that I'm going to take in.
Yeah.
Games like that really like.
That game has something that I really, that a lot of games that I really like have, where there's a sense of collection in it and a sense of like inventory management, which I know it sounds boring, but like I totally get into it. Like when I really like a game, I really like the inventory and I just spend so much time in it. But I think like there's a, you know, definitely an addictive like collector quality that I have that, you know, really makes that work. And there's another thing I was thinking about the other day, which maybe this is like my background in game guides and cheats. But I really like feeling like I have an advantage in a game. Like if I did something that was really difficult and then it gave me a leg up, but I did it early and the game let me do that. Like, I think that's so cool. I love that's like that feeds something in me where it's just like, well, I kind of broke this. I sequence broke or something, but I, you know, it took a lot of work. And then I have a little bit of an advantage for a little bit. You know, and RPGs were always like that when I was mm-hmm. a kid.
I was going to say, when I had 12 hours a day to play a video game.
You could like grind and then like, get a good level.
Playing Final Fantasy 7 or Final Fantasy 9, like I would just like, the second I get to the open world, I'm like, cool, this is me for 3 hours. Yeah. And I would just get super, super strong. And I'm like, all right, now let's progress. And I just kill everything.
But that's been taken out of games.
Level scaling has.
Yeah, the legendary, mm-hmm. that's actually ruined. Another thing. Item drops, when you get like something crazy, like early on.
Or
really
if you earn
you.
It through a boss battle or something.
Yes, even though you had to like cheese it or something, you know? It may have taken like 2 hours just to like whittle away this boss, but you figure out a way with enough HP potions to do it. That's so cool.
One of my favorite things about Final Fantasy X was finding everyone's master weapons, because you had like they were specific quests and they kind of navigated like story aspects that were particular to those characters too, and they were just like these badass weapons.
Impossible.
Because
nobody plays Blitzball.
What?
And you have to have to get the world champion. You have to.
Do you
play
not
Blitzball.
Like Blitzball?
No.
Why not? Why
and Final Fantasy X is my favorite Final Fantasy of all time.
Well, that's
possibly
that's
one of my favorite
sentiment.
Games of all time.
Yeah.
Blitzball. No.
Yeah, that's a really common sense.
Waka's weapon is the one I've like never.
Yeah,
is
never
one got. Of the characters you have to play Blitzball for?
Well, that's his background. Like he comes from an island, he used to be a competitor, and you bring him onto your group.
What does playing Blitzball mean?
It's basically like soccer in the water. It's actually more like Quidditch.
Yeah,
but what do you play in the game?
Water.
Is there a team sport they just built into it?
Yeah,
it's in the game, and like you can go around and recruit people to be on your team.
Yeah.
And so then, it's like Gwent.
And then
you go through like leagues
but and terrible. Because the game just like cheats sometimes.
It is
and so
hard.
And you have to win the big tournament to be able to get the item to unlock the world champion.
Did you ever consider getting good?
No getting good.
I think
good.
That's what
it
Nina's saying right now is that you need to get good.
To be fair, I was not good at Blitzball either.
If there's anything you take from this entire if there's anything you take from this entire conversation, it's that you should play Slay the Spire because that game is dope.
Why do we go back to that?
That game is dope.
I think you should avoid feeding monkeys when you're told not to.
That's the point of this whole podcast.
We're just see this is
it's
the
okay
podcast
to feed
on
the
loop.
Monkeys.
Now we're on Outer Wild.
Actually, we didn't.
Did we crash into the sun?
Yeah. One thing about monkeys real quick. So you're allowed to feed the monkeys at that place, right?
Yeah.
Arashima.
It's encouraged.
No problem.
I guess,
you don't feed them outside food. At every other place in Japan, it's like, stay away from the monkeys. Don't look at them. Don't look at them in the eyes. Like, don't get near
don't
them.
Talk about
if
them.
If you see them, don't talk about food around them.
Well,
if you hear them using a spoken language, pretend you don't know it.
They can sense that you're thinking about
them. Do not show them flint and steel.
That's why they specifically make you feed them in the human cages.
Yeah.
Because mm-hmm. they understand the distinction between, okay, I don't ask for food and don't steal food when they're not in the cages.
Yeah, but I was hiking by myself in the jungle a little bit, and at one point I was like, if I see a monkey, I don't know if I'm going to be able to handle it.
But you could handle those cats.
Well, because I'm going to have to stare it in the eyes. There are so many
that's
jungle cats.
A sign
cats
of aggression.
You know cats in Japan have shorter tails? Just everywhere?
I did not notice that.
They're like 6 inches long.
Did you take out a measuring tape?
Yeah. No, every cat. No, it's obvious.
Like, wait a minute.
They have weird stub tails. Well, maybe they're just normal tails.
The first thing he did.
Long tails.
The first thing he did when he got home, he's like measuring his own cat's tail. I knew it!
Well, we can't be Western centric, you know. Maybe have the longer cat tail.
I've recanted my short tail statement.
Okay. Everybody be cool. I have to deliver this week's sponsor message. Well, I hope you're happy.
Was that an accident, Dan?
I hope you're happy because you just spoiled the victory music for Video Game
Aww.
20 Questions.
No, I think it's this
now
one. Actually.
Now it will ring hollow if you if you guys
we
actually
won't
win.
It'll be fine.
Okay.
What was that thing at the end?
Was that a bird chirping? A
bird got in.
Well, here's the hint. It's you're playing your character's in has an audience.
Oh,
that was supposed to be the audience that you heard.
Oh, is it Smash TV?
No, it's Super Punch Out.
Oh, cool. Yeah. Wow.
Some cool guitar ripping guitar sounds. This is John in Keysville, New York. Keysville, you know where that is?
No, never not heard at all.
I've been an avid consumer. I've been an avid consumer of GameScoop for the past few years. I check my podcast app a few times a day on Fridays until it shows as available. You all do a great job. Keep up the good work. A couple weeks ago, you were discussing Game of the Year candidates. You were talking about the few 9.5s that IGN had given out throughout the year. I just watched the Final Fantasy XIV Shadowbringers review and 100% agree with everything you wrote. I am just finishing up the main story and believe that the story has been the best from any Final Fantasy game in well over 10 years. You awarded a 9.5, which begs the question, would you consider Shadowbringers in the end-of-year Game of the Year discussion? I don't usually see an MMO in this position, but there is something special with this expansion. Can it go where few MMOs go and win best in show?
Is it eligible, Tina?
Well, I mean, it's obviously eligible just inherently, but especially because we've rated it highly. I actually polled my team to see what their current Game of the Year contenders are, and Matt Kim listed Shadowbringers on his list. So he removed, I don't know if this is throwing him under the bus, but he removed Sekiro for it.
Sorry, Sekiro.
Yeah.
Not good enough.
Five, get lost.
Yeah.
But so one thing that's confusing to me, though, is that isn't this an expansion? This isn't a new game?
Yeah, that's true. It is an expansion, but allegedly it also like completely revamps the online experience. I have to dig in more. I have to consult.
Yeah, I guess I'd want to know, is it significant enough to like to beat an entirely new game?
Well, it also depends on like what the rest of the year looks like. Like I was kind of trying to think of what my Game of the Year contenders are, and they're not really no-brainers like last year felt, which was not our Game of the Year, my Game of the Year.
What was your Game of the Year last year?
Red Dead 2.
Oh, okay.
We gave it to God of War, but that's fine. That was a good game too. I'm not mad about it.
That's fine.
We just made the wrong decision. It's not a big deal.
Yeah.
Mark, will you play Shadowbringers? You love Final Fantasy X.
I do love Final Fantasy, but Final Fantasy XIV is something I've never been able to get into. My MMO days are
What are you talking about?
Yeah.
You play Fallout 76 all day, every day.
That's true. All day, every day. I play nothing else. Well, because...
But that is an MMO.
No, it's not.
Explain.
Massive multiplayer online RPG. That's Fallout only houses
got 24. All three of those things.
It only houses 24 people on a map.
All right.
That's not massive.
It was in 1991.
An MMO is a minimal multiplayer online RPG.
We've been saying it wrong.
No, see, that's
maybe multiplayer online RPG.
That's
microscopic
shared world adventures. That's what that is. Because, like, is Destiny an MMO? I wouldn't say that's an MMO. No.
Well, they decided to like invent their own genre.
Right, that's what I'm saying. Shared world shooters, shared world experience, adventures but, like, kind of thing. Kind of was an MMO. I played World of Warcraft for 10 years, since 2006. Loved it. Played all the way up to, I don't even remember anymore.
The Panda
one? The Panda. No, it was like one after that. The Apocalypse one, which is weird because I like post-apocalyptic, and that's the one that lost me. I've played Final Fantasy XIV, but it just... The MMO combat just doesn't do it for me anymore. And paying $15 a month to play a game.
Did you know that according to Open Critic, it is currently sitting at the number one rated, like average rated review?
What game is?
Shadowbringers.
Wow.
Yeah. It's number one.
Like of the year or?
So far, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, you want to know the rest of the list?
Yeah.
Sure.
Okay. Shadowbringers. Uh-huh. Resident Evil 2.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nier, if you count the Game of the Year edition. Sekiro.
I don't.
Wait, Nier... Automata?
Yeah.
Okay.
Sekiro, Slay the Spire, DMC5.
Yes, Slay the Spire.
Super Mario Maker 2, Outer Wilds, Apex Legends, Steins Gate, Cadence of Hyrule.
Steins Gate.
Interesting year, right?
Steins Gate game.
I mean, we still have... The things that are on my radar for the rest of the year are Control, Ancestors, Borderlands 3, Gears 5, Death Stranding, Jedi Fallen Order. Like, those are pretty good contenders, too. I feel like some of the heavyweights haven't really come out yet.
Well, that's true. Okay, well, Mark, you did mention Inside earlier. We actually have the video game Inside.
Sure.
We have a question about Inside from, I believe it's pronounced Twan in Washington State. He spells it out phonetically, Twan. I was wondering if anyone ever found out what happened to the Inside Collector's Edition that featured a collaboration with Real Doll. I believe it was $375 and actually sold out. For that much money, I would think people would start to question when it was coming out. Thanks for all that you guys do. And I think we got an update on that last month. I think it's been delayed, but they gave us like a a blurry screenshot of something that's supposed to hint at what it is.
I forget. There was an update.
But they said it's still coming.
It's like still coming, yeah.
2019.
We confirmed internally that we bought one, too.
We pre-ordered it.
We have one coming here.
So the second the news came out, we were like, pre-order. Yeah.
So we'll definitely have an unboxing of that. Sure. Whatever it is, we'll be sharing it with you. We'll be inflicting it upon you.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. It's supposed to come sometime this year.
Mario World.
Yes. And speaking of Mario World, this is Diego, our friend from Guatemala. He says, since the release of Super Mario Maker 2, I've been playing nonstop. I realized that I love Super Mario World. The art style and the platforming is so good. I haven't played that game since I was little. Now I really want to return to that game, but I don't own any Nintendo system with a virtual console. Do you think they will release an SNES collection of games for the Nintendo Switch Online, or should I spend $150 on an SNES Classic? It's more expensive here in Guatemala. That's why it's $150. Mm-hmm. Love your show. You make me laugh so much. GameScoop is life.
Yeah.
GameScoop is life. We still have not heard anything about Super Nintendo games coming to Nintendo Switch Online, unfortunately.
Yeah. I imagine it's got to be like a no-brainer at some point in time.
Well, it's on the new Nintendo 3DS, but like it's I don't really get what's happening with Switch. Like why they're not releasing these consoles. Like
you got to keep your tricks in your sleeve, you know, and every once in a while I'll be like, Switch Lite. SNES.
Yeah.
That said, the SNES Classic is awesome.
It is great. We were just talking last week how what a good collection of games that is.
Yeah. Well, and the controller feels super good.
Yeah.
Easy to plug in.
It's a good little party favor, too, like when people come over.
Yeah.
How do you play Super Mario World, Damon?
Wait a minute. I put with the random button. If the random button takes me there, then I'll play.
That might be a good way to play it on the super cheap. I would never recommend emulation, personally. Legal emulation.
Yeah. Legal emulation. I wonder if you could get like a 2DS for cheaper. You can get a 2DS for cheaper than $150, surely.
Yeah, you could get like you could get Super Mario Advance for some older system like DS Lite or something too.
Yeah, it's that too.
That's probably really available actually, just getting a DS now and playing advanced games on it, like in other countries too. DS was so popular worldwide, that might be a good way to go. Super Mario Advance is not the best way to play Mario World, but a Super
Nintendo. Yeah, those games are they're like always changing. That's on Game Boy Advance, right? But you can play it on the like first DS.
Yeah. You can like plug it in the bottom of that first DS. And the light.
I remember those games like have voices and stuff, and it always weirds me out. It's like you pick a level, and he's like, let's go. And you're like, what are you doing? That's weird.
The advanced games like in Super Mario Brothers 2, it makes no sense.
Yeah.
It's really strange.
All right. That brings us to video game 20 questions. And I picked a game this week, but then I had second thoughts because I think it's too hard. So I picked a second game this
week. Was it Lemmings 2?
It wasn't Lemmings 2.
Oh.
So I assume you guys want the one that I think is a little bit easier. Is that right?
Yeah, but if we get it too fast, you can do the hard one.
Okay, all right. Our suggestion comes from Doug Brady. Let the questioning begin.
Do people not know to write in where they're from?
Doug Brady didn't. A lot of people did. A lot of people do, but
maybe
Doug
you
Brady
can just pick people that write in.
Maybe I should make that the stipulation.
Because I don't think we're going to get it if we don't where they live.
Yeah. Where do you think Doug's live from? Come from? Where does Doug hail from?
Where do all Doug's come from? There's nowhere to know.
I'm watching King of Queens right now. I love that show. It's an old sitcom.
That's really random.
Doug Heffernan, he lives in Queens.
Oh, let's go with that. Excellent.
Doug from
Queens. Maybe
he
lives in Queens.
All right.
Cool.
Doug from Queens.
Mm-hmm.
Is this from before 1990?
No.
After let's go with January 1st, 2010. Is it after January 1st, 2010?
No.
Oh, I screwed up.
20 years.
We got 90. 20 years.
Wait, you said if is it? You said
it. I said after 2010. He said before 1990.
Okay.
So we have 1990 to 2010.
Okay.
Yeah. We're screwed. You have a third easier one.
is it multi-platform?
Yeah. Yes, it is. Sorry, I shouldn't have hesitated. Yes.
Okay.
Did it come out on an optical-based format?
No.
Weird. So DLC or cartridge?
We're not going in an order, are we? I thought we just shouted out.
Oh, yeah.
We're going in order. I'm just looking at you while I think.
Yeah. It's because we're not ready either, Mark.
Did it come out before 2000?
Yes. That's 5.
So it's not DLC. It's a cartridge. On different systems?
Mortal Kombat. I don't know.
Is this a 16-bit game?
It is available on 16-bit platforms.
Oh, cool. So like a cross-generational 8-bit, 16-bit, Eric.
Yeah.
Is it part of a series?
Yeah, we'll say it's part of a series. There's been more than one release, but like there wasn't ever this game 2, but there have been some variations on it.
Okay.
Cool.
So is there like a Japanese version then maybe that is different or what other?
Or it's like...
Like ports don't.
Did this come out on NES?
No.
Oh boy. All right. That's the library I know the best. So, did it come out on Super Nintendo?
Yes.
Okay. So that the thing he was just saying could apply to a game like, well, is this based on a license?
Yes.
Okay.
That's
what were you thinking?
Everything I was thinking of was based on a license. I was going to say like, oh, there's like a Tasmanian Devil game, but you know, there's one where he runs forward and one where it's a platform where he runs sideways.
Also like Aladdin, Lion King, they're different on Sega.
And there weren't
Sega
sequels.
Yeah, that's a really good example.
But that was, oh, it is SNES.
It's SNES.
Is this a license Genesis based on a movie?
But it's not licensed.
No.
Wow.
All right, well, that goes,
yeah.
No, because it could be a TV show or a kid's cereal.
Yeah.
I can't remember if we count that. Do you count if it's a Chester Cheetah game? Is it counted as a licensed game?
Yeah, I would count that as a licensed.
Let's just end it now. Is this Chester Cheetah's Adventure in Cheetah?
All right. Well, it's probably the Home Improvement game, but we'll keep that one in the holster for now.
It's rare.
Is it good?
You like.
Yeah.
It doesn't have a lot to do with tools. Go against dinosaurs right at the beginning.
Yeah, the first level is a dinosaur level. But it's on set, so it makes sense.
Yeah.
All right, on track. Genre or perspective?
Or do you want to find out what kind of license is based on, whether it's food or TV?
We'll just keep going through those.
Yeah, is this based on TV?
I thought there was like a blanket, is this a like license game?
We got that.
Yeah, we got that.
Exactly. So we don't.
But it's not based on a movie. So it's not Aladdin or Lion King.
Do you shoot in this game? What? You have a gun.
No. Hold on. Okay. Can we modify that?
Yeah.
Sure. What do you got?
Because I was going to say we can ask about weapons in general, because if it's not shooting, but it's some kind of like melee type thing, then it narrows it down between like combat versus not.
So do you use weapons in this game? Do you use weapons in this game?
No.
Okay.
What do you do in this game?
Okay. So I don't know. Puzzle, platforming,
Is this a license Light that's sim. Not based on something you watch?
Racing.
No, you do watch this license.
Okay.
Okay. So it's not...
How often?
Have I personally?
So it's based on a TV show.
Oh, well.
So it's like one of the Simpsons games or Ren and Stimpy. Is this based on an animated TV show?
No.
Okay, damn it.
We are screwed.
Well, you said
if it's Home Improvement,
you said
like,
animated,
it's got to be Home Improvement.
So you do watch it. You could have said TV show.
Yeah.
We could. How many questions? Oh,
we have 6 left.
Yeah.
And we're not any closer than we were 14 ago.
Is it based on Home Improvement?
No. Whoa!
That game is too. It's amazing he brought it up.
It's too obscure.
It can't be the easy
too hard.
Game.
Yeah.
It could also be Full House Tournament Fighter.
I remember the Home Improvement game.
Okay.
Like its existence.
Yeah.
Not much other than that.
I don't know if it's based on something you watch. Should we ask if it's a platformer or does that even matter? Is that too obvious?
I feel like if he says yes, it doesn't help us at all.
Well, if it's no weapons, then it's, yeah, true. If it's no weapons, it's either platformer, like a flight sim or racing game or.
I want to act.
What else could it be? Puzzle.
But it's a property that we watch, but it's not an animated show. It's not
sports.
A movie.
It could be sports.
Sports. But what Damon, was like a Damon one-off? Would never pick a sports
yeah,
game.
Yeah, he would. Is this a sports game?
Yes.
Oh, boy.
We got 15.
I'm out.
I think we can get this.
One thing I don't play.
Well, let's see. We got.
Is it something you watch? Should have given that away.
We got Madden 95, Madden 96.
No, there are no sequels, so it can't be a That's sequel true. Game.
Wait, is Madden?
I just have to identify.
But he said there's never been a 2.
Wait, hold on. There's never been a Madden 2. Madden 19, 2019, and then you get Madden 20, is Madden 20 the sequel?
Yes, I forgot the boss fight music too.
I like how much this is tickling Mark right now.
I just didn't think about the fact like, oh, it's not sequels. It's like, our sports, what's different now?
So there's like.
That's so good. They could be.
It's probably NBA Jam. I'm trying to think of the really NBA most popular Jam,
but
thing.
But doesn't that count as a series, as part of the series?
Yeah, no. But there's never a 2.
Yeah, no, well, because there's NBA Jam, and then like arcade versions, yeah. And then they remade NBA Jam for like modern consoles.
But it did come out in an optical-based medium, but I don't think Damon would know that.
Did it have a more current, I don't know, rendition?
Well, that doesn't.
What? It does, doesn't it?
Didn't NBA like
a,
Jam?
Yeah, didn't something come out like a year ago or something?
No, there's like a different street ball game that's out now.
Oh, I see.
Hmm.
Did this come out in arcades?
Yes.
Okay. Is it a basketball game?
Yes.
When you make... Hold on.
So it's definitely Arch Rivals.
when you dunk from half court, does somebody yell, boom shakalaka?
I think so.
Woo!
I've never actually played this game.
Cool. We got it. Is this NBA Jam?
Yes. Did it was like Sega CD or something? Is that the option?
Yeah, I think it was. Yeah. Sorry. No, it's nothing. I mean, that would have thrown us off, so I'm happy you did.
Arcades in 93, then came to just everything at the time. Mm-hmm.
Those were my jams. NBA Jam and
something NBA like, Jam was your jam?
Name one other jam.
No, like NFL Blitz. Is that kind
of... not a jam.
But it's that style of like arcade-y... Like sports. Like I said, NBA Jam, you can dunk from half court.
And
NFL Blitz, you can Hail Mary 90 yards and he'll catch it every time. Like
I think there was a modern re-release of NBA Jam.
That's what I was
trying to say.
Yeah.
I know
know there's another like knockoff that's really popular too that's doing the same thing.
NBA Jam On Fire Edition 2011 PlayStation 3 Xbox 360.
Oh, that's so contemporary and recent.
Yeah,
it is.
I mean, it's only.
I was thinking like 2017 or something. I guess I say right.
I think Tina saved a lot of face like by finding out a 2011 version of NBA Jam.
Totally what I was thinking about.
Yeah,
I'm glad you guys got that. Do you want to know what the other one was?
Hold on. Just give us the console. And we'll get it from there.
It didn't start on console.
Well, is it an arcade game?
Yes.
Okay, we can get this. Is it from before 1983?
Before 1993?
83.
No.
Is it from before 1990?
Yes.
Did Atari make it?
No.
Did Williams make it?
No.
Did Midway make it?
No.
Oh, boy. Is it made in Japan?
Yes.
Oh, interesting. Optical-based media?
Well, no.
Okay.
No.
Does it have a modern re-release?
No.
Did Sega make it?
No.
Oh. Wow. And what did Nintendo make it?
No.
Okay. I don't know. Is this going to get boring before it gets better? Are you still looking up NBA Jams over there?
Yeah, I'm trying to figure out what the thing that came out about a year ago.
There was a street game.
Yeah, I think that
NBA Playgrounds, that was called?
Yeah.
Oh, like yeah, I think that's what it was. They announced something. Okay, thanks. It was going to kill me all day.
Did this use a joystick?
Yes.
Oh boy. Was it two player at once?
No, two player alternating.
Yeah,
how about this? It's a sequel.
I don't think we would have got this one. Is it a brawler?
No.
Okay.
It is Galaga 88.
Oh yeah, that's a good game.
Yeah.
That's a really good, cool game.
I like that game a lot.
Wait, didn't I? Oh, I didn't do Namco.
Yeah, Namco.
Namco. I bet Midway published that. No, maybe not.
I think it was just Namco.
Okay. You know what arcade game I played?
No. How would we know?
Like 2 weeks ago. Wow. Okay. Well, if you follow me on Twitter, you have a very good. You have a very good. I don't know.
Well, if you posted about it on Twitter, you misspelled the name of the game and the name of the arcade.
Okay. You know what? Here's the deal. Jared Petty ended up replying with a much better response than if I had even spelled it correctly.
That's true. He did.
I said, what was.
You said five fives.
I said five fives instead of five guys. And then he said, nice fives, Guinness last. It was really, really good.
What's the game?
Oh yeah, Pac-Man Battle Royale.
Okay. That's a really fun.
It's
game.
Really
it was
good.
Fun.
That one's really good.
What's Five Guys?
It's a burger.
It's a burger.
You wouldn't understand. How about this, listeners? Mark thinks Five Guys is disgusting.
I just said, what do you think about that?
Mark also thinks Shake Shack is delicious.
What I said.
He's right about that.
With my legs propped up at my desk, was that it blows.
You could save face right now by saying,
I meant five fives.
True.
I've eaten Shake Shack at an airport and it was better than Five Guys.
Shake Shack is better.
Yeah.
But Five Guys is fine.
I had Mexican food in Japan.
I think.
Really?
It's really funny because.
It's great.
What's the best thing you ate in Japan?
Pizza from a place called Monk, which is really good. Tina's been to.
Wow.
That was really good. And then I had some weird fish.
Weird fish, yeah.
Like, you know, you get like sashimi, and you're like, I'm not really sure what everything is here.
They have.
Like, I wouldn't eat the raw shrimp, like, ever, anywhere. That's the only thing that I'm a little bit worried about. But normally, I wouldn't eat, like, raw scallop and some other things, but I ate it there, and it was great.
Ugh, raw octopus. Can't do it.
Yeah, it's way too chewy.
Yeah.
Anyway, we're running super long.
Okay.
That is all the scoops we have for you this week. Tina and I are going to head down to Comic-Con, tune into all of our coverage. Fun.
You guys are
going to
meet so many celebrities.
I know.
Yeah.
Yes. That's her job.
Yeah, and you're half of it. I'm
going to do the meet
and
greet
like a third of the time.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. That's cool.
And you're doing interviews, right?
I'm doing a bunch of interviews. Yeah.
I'm doing some of those too.
And then we'll be back next week for your regularly scheduled scoop. So thank you, Tina. Thank you, Sam. Thank you, Mark. My name is Damon. This is IGN Game Scoop, and we're out.
Hey there, this is Justin Bartha. I made a funny new podcast, King of the Egg Cream. It has the greatest cast in the history of podcasts with actors like Louis Black.
I'm torn by my feelings for two women.
Bobby Cannavale.
You can eat it, or if someone hits you, you can put it on your cut.
Melanie Lynskey.
I wonder what these marvelous things are that look just like boiled chicken feet.
Jason Ritter.
I can break things and pick locks and kill people.
Michael Stuhlbarg.
The whole point is to inspire people that they should make themselves better.
Ari Grainer.
No, don't whet its appetite. What are you, an idiot?
Me, Justin Bartha.
That's not just any egg cream, that's a Lemke's special.
And all narrated by the hilarious Richard Kind.
This is the story of Harry Dalowitz. And how he rose from nothing to become New York's King of the Egg Cream.
So if you like funny true stories, come listen to King of the Egg Cream, available wherever you get your podcasts.